Thank you, DM. I can see that we are here. Thank you for attending this meeting. And our meeting is we've got presentations, but we're holding our meeting when we're coming from oversight that we have to conduct out of the resolution that was taken by the House, which I think at the appropriate time when we discuss that, those reports from both teams, we will talk on them. Safe to say thank you to all those members who honored those oversight visits, which were over the weekend. On a lighter note, sure, in Upington, it was so cold. Sunday morning was bitterly cold, but it's winter, what do you expect? But yeah, thank you very much. Welcoming Honorable GM. I haven't seen the minister. Yeah, Honorable Mr. Sakaza, can you please take us through the roll call?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to my chairperson. Good morning to the members. Good morning to the DM, the department at large. Chair, we've got today, Honorable Chair, we've got Honorable Nontsele, Honorable Makubela, Honorable Mkhonto, Honorable Bigram, Honorable Ngobo. I see Honorable Zuma is joining in also now. And then from the staff chair, we've got myself chair, we've got Koshian Tabeni, Sbongseni Ngobo, Tebogo Mokoena chair. And then we did receive chair an apology from the Honorable Minister. Honorable DM is here, chair. Thank you very much, chair.
Thank you very much. I would imagine DM.
Chairperson,
sorry,
I just want to make sure whether did you omit my name by mistake
sorry, Mr. Honorable A. Inana. Sorry for that.
Okay, thanks.
I would appreciate if members can indicate if their gadgets are not enabling them to lift up their hands if they want to be recognized. I will appreciate that. And I will humbly request Mr. Inana to mute his device, please. With that from the committee, I don't see if the DG is here. Mr. DG, I wouldn't then know who is to introduce the team from the department.
Thank you so much.
If the DG is not in the meeting.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, we do have Executive Director from NETLAC, Ms. Lisa Sefter, who's here. We've got Nobuntu CBC, also from NETLAC. We've got Mr. Vuyo Mafata, who's from Compensation Fund. And I think we've got Witumelo Kumbu, I think he's from us. And I think Faran is also from ourselves. And I think, we've got also Mr. Johnny Modiba from Compensation Fund. And we've got Julian Sopen also from Compensation Fund. We've got Karabo Makakani from my office. We've got Ntate Kangala Mutumela from who's the Chief of Staff in our ministry. And we do have Mema Tapelo from the Office of the DG. We've got, I think, Nozipo Ngema also from NETLAC. And we've got Dr. Sam Rotoba in this instance, Honorable Chairperson. I think Mr. Sam Rotoba will be standing in for the DG. And we have Dr. Temiko Simkalipi. We've got Zanisina Mweli from my office, head of office. We've got Dr. Tandowa Baba from the department. We've got Mr. Tebogo Tejane from communications in our department. And I think really, those that I might not have actually mentioned, I think that the either Chief of Staff or that the Morotoba might just highlight them, those that I might not necessarily know.
Recording in progress.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, in fact, I thought you would indicate to us who's leading the delegation and who has been delegated in terms of the DG. Thank you that you have made that roll call. It's fine. Can we get
Mr. Mrotoba is the one who's leading, sir. Mr. Mrotoba is the one who's leading the delegation. And on the presentations, Ms. Lisa from NETLAC will present, and Mr. Vuyo Mafata from Compensation Fund will be presenting. But in this instance, Mr. Mrotoba will be leading the team. Thank you.
Are there any guests, Mr. Sakas?
Chair, I haven't seen any other person, Chair, who's Yes,
okay. Okay. We haven't received any apology why the DG is not here. Mr. Wababa?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. In the inbox of the secretariat, there is an apology for the DG who has taken some few days off due to bereavement. Mr. Mrotoba is acting in that position. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. Zolan, call me agent.
Okay, Chair, let me just say that. I'm looking for it, Chair, sorry.
I will.
No, they can't, that's it.
Can we then, there is the agenda, honorable members. We're going to have briefings for second quarter from NETLAC and the Compensation Fund. We will then hand over to NETLAC to take us through their presentation. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, and to all members and officials. I'm presenting on the second quarter performance report from July to September last year. I think if we will recall in that period, that was when there was the July unrest in KZN and in Gauteng. So my first slide really refers to the highlights, and it was in that period responding to the July unrest. It also, there were a number of strategic dialogues, and we also implemented a restructuring within NEDLAC. I will talk in more detail to these highlights in the next slides. So there were also a number of challenges, which I'll also come back to. We had some challenges to finalize reports, but not impacting on the content of the reports, just really on the timing of the processes. We've had an ongoing problem of capacity in NEDLAC, and in that period, we also had a problem around digitalization, remembering that we are mostly online, both of staff and of social partners. These are the indicators of our performance. Since the version that was circulated, I have crossed the T's and dotted the I's and made this more easy to understand. So in the first, the first column sets out our three programs: administration, core operations, which is the heart of our business, and then capacity building for constituencies. So altogether as NEDLAC, we have 15 indicators, the majority being in administration because they relate to IT and facilities and governance and so on. Core operations, there are four, capacity building, there are three. But not all the indicators are applicable for every quarter. So the second column indicates that there were 10 that were applicable for this quarter. Some are annual targets, and some there was no activity. For example, in relationship to Section 77 protests, there was no application. So we achieved collectively 8, and we didn't achieve 2, which is an 80% overall achievement. In the document that was circulated, it indicated 82%, and on the capacity building, it indicated 67%, which I apologize, was incorrect. So I will talk more about these on the next slide. In terms of the two indicators that were not met, the first one relates to training. In fact, as I'm sure I will come back to report, we had a problem of meeting our training targets throughout the year. This was very disappointing because we have made training and capacity building one of our key focuses of this year. In this quarter, the problem related to the fact that we implemented the restructuring. And for many staff, it required them to review their personal development plans in line with where they had been redeployed. And there was a delay in doing that. Then for the constituency capacity building, we didn't achieve one of the targets because although the target works that if a constituency requests something, NEDLAC must deliver on it. And the community constituency asked for a training intervention, but the request came too late for us to deliver in the quarter. So that's where we didn't deliver. So now what did we really focus on in this quarter? We had, and it was very successful, and it was for the first time, we had what we called a government budget dialogue session. And it was really an opportunity before the National Treasury begins to plan for the medium-term budget policy statement that the social partners were able to give inputs on what they would like to see with expenditure, what they'd like to see with revenue, how they'd like to see issues of tax and debt issues addressed. Members might be aware that Cabinet has approved a national infrastructure plan with a goal of 2050, and there was a dialogue about this. And then arising out of the government budget dialogue, there was a call for another dialogue on anti-corruption, which happened on the 30th of September. I mean, all these dialogues, it's not one person, it's, you know, all the social partners giving inputs and engaging. And then before we started to negotiate the critical skills list, there was also a dialogue on that. Now, in terms of NEDAC processes and others, where, you know, task teams are set up which would really deliberate on a policy or legislation or regulation in the economic cluster. So we've reorganized two units, one focusing on economic and one focusing on labor and development. So within the economic unit, there was work on a one related to efficiency in borders, and then there are a number of trade issues. In terms of labor and development, this area was very active. There was a conclusion on the Green Paper on Comprehensive Social Security from the Department of Social Development, a draft official identity management policy from Home Affairs, the Central Application Bill around universities from DIET, the ARTA regulation from the Department of Transport around driver's licenses. This is a policy, even though it's called a strategy to support the successful implementation of the ERRP. In the Labour Market Chamber, the department tabled a code of good practice on the prevention and elimination of harassment in the workplace. The labor law reform process is initiated there with the establishment of the task team. And then the Department of Public Service Administration tabled two bills, which however were withdrawn. And we also were able to conclude on the National Health Insurance Bill. Now, in terms of Section 77 of the LRA, these are socioeconomic disputes where we have a standing committee. So there were no applications that were deliberated upon. However, COSATU previously were able to get a certificate to go on protest, and they did protest on the 7th of October in respect of economic crisis. And the committee, there's a standing committee which has deliberated on a revised code of good practice that would guide the implementation of the section. It is now concluded, but there was a lot of work done in this quarter. Now we also have a manager responsible for emerging issues, and there's two emerging issues for us in responding to the July unrest. In terms of responding to COVID, this was really a very important time to mobilize for vaccination rollout, including at the workplace, and there was a lot of collaboration in NEDLAC. It was a time in which I think those who are 35 and above were entitled to be vaccinated. And there was also a lot of discussion about whether the OHS direction under the state of disaster, but issued by the Department of Employment and Labour, should put in provisions for vaccinations. It subsequently did happen, but the discussions happened in this quarter. Ongoing attempts of work on communication and behavioural change, and ongoing oversight around the UIF COVID TERS to ensure that all workers that were due to get it got it, and workers that were not due to get it did not get this benefit. Now, the July unrest happened, I think, from the 7th or 8th of July. On the 14th of July, there was an urgent EXCO meeting, and that meeting of all the social partners, including government, agreed that there needed to be an urgent response on four pillars. Obviously, first was stabilization, which involved at the time ensuring that the army was able to come in, securing essential supplies, and this really was around, if you can recall, the N3 was closed. And it was difficult to get essential supplies, even bread and so on, into communities, as well as the reopening and the movement of ports. And then the third area, which is really the area which the social partners concentrated a lot on, was about relief and support to rebuild. And there was collaboration around food parcels between Solidarity Fund and DSD. There was an agreement to extend the COVID-19 social relief of distress grant, and that became the WABU grant. There was discussion with Department of Small Business and DTIC and National Treasury to support businesses that were not properly insured. The UIF was the WABU, and then there was a lot of pressure and just about extending the social relief stress costs. And then after the unrest, the NEDEX implementation was secured. Then the members here must be aware that NEDEX is playing a role in the implementation of the ERRP. The focus in this period was on three work streams. The SMME work stream, where there was engagement.
I'm not sure what went wrong here.
Is anybody there?
Chen, did I get disconnected?
Yeah, sorry, if you could start again, it would take about 2 minutes. Is our chair here?
I am
I'm having difficulty hearing anyone.
I can't hear anything.
Hello, Chair. Hey, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I hear you, but I don't know. Lisa is susceptible. I can't hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm really sorry about this. I'm not sure what is happening, but I'll go quickly now. We focused on economic recovery. We worked on SMMEs and then also on public transport and freight. This was in the period in which President Ramaphosa went to and announced the issue of the separation of the National Ports Authority, which was also discussed in NEDLAC. There's been ongoing discussions in NEDLAC on the problems of port congestion. And there was also a presentation from the Department of Transport on high-speed rail. On energy, the DMRE on their policy and legislative program, and there's ongoing work on the just transition, ongoing reports from Eskom on the work of the just transition in Mpumalanga. Then the committee may be interested that this governance task team, which is looking at how to make NEDLAC fit for purpose, had a number of meetings and met recommendations that were approved by the EXCO in the third quarter firstly, there's a consensus on a slightly revised mandate and role of NEDLAC, which then would need to be lead to amendments of the NEDLAC founding documents. There is a theory of change in our strategic plan, given the EXCO have agreed should guide this new model for NEDLAC. Then there's also an agreement that an update the representativity of all discussion on the need for NEDLAC to focus more on capacity building, knowledge management and research. And there was also a discussion on which ministry should be responsible for NEDLAC. There was an agreement that the Department of Employment and Labor should remain the ministry responsible, but that a mechanism needs to put in place when we amend the Constitution and Act and so on for the situation when another minister, not the Minister of Employment and Labor, brings something to NEDLAC and there's a problem, it's very difficult for a peer minister to address the problem. Then just internally on corporate services, I've indicated already that we restructured the organization from the 1st of August. We have also done a number of work with information technology on updating our policies and enhancing our security. And in facilities, we do own NEDLAC House and we have done work to improve it. And obviously, we also had to keep updating the protocols and plans. On the capacity building, the key highlight here is that provider to assist them in respect of the electricity price path. Community had three provincial workshops in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. They concluded provincial workshops in all provinces, and Labor made plans to secure resource to support them with research, policy development, legal advice, and negotiations. On the financial report, this is our financial report, and I will talk to the key highlights on the next slide. There was a savings on the compensation of employees due to vacancies. Now, in the first quarter, there was very poor spending. There was a significant increase in spending, you can see from 1.9 million to 5.7, although it is still an underspending compared to year to date. However, plans are put in place and we have improved our spending over all the four quarters. There were no new transactions of irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we were able to award four tenders. I've already talked about electricity price path, a communication service provider, a digitalization service provider, and an energy expert and facilitator for the energy work stream. Chairperson, I really apologize for that break in, can I say, transmission. As my presentation is concluded.
What has happened now?
I'm concluded, Chairperson.
You have concluded?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, honorable members. Any questions?
I put my hand up, Madam Chair.
Let me just see how many hands are there.
Mkhonto, Chair.
Honorable Mkhonto. Honorable Cardo. Honorable Baker, Honorable Mkhonto, Honorable Cardo. In
Ngobo,
that order.
Chair, I'm trying to raise my hand, I'm sorry.
Honorable Ngobo, in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it, and thank you for that input. I'm going to go straight into it. You had a look at the critical skills list. Do you feel that that skills list is adequate? I mean, from my point of view, it appears that it's very thin and on the ground. But the real problem is, of course, once you apply for someone with critical skills, it takes months, if not years, sometimes to get that through. There's a real block. It might be worth looking at the process of that. In the next slide, you're looking at labor reforms, but you just give us a blank, almost a scattergun approach. Can you give us a list or at least email Mr. Zakhasa what labor reforms you're talking about and what the suggestions is? The next slide, you had a look at your key areas of focus, emerging issues, the UI19 TERS. Have you come up with any solution as to why that was such a disaster and where there are literally thousands of people who, in fact, still haven't got their TERS despite claiming? If I go on to the next slide, you looked at public transport, but you obviously know that for the COSATU has just put out a statement, in fact, yesterday, that public transport for workers is an absolute disaster, and it's really costing the people, the workers, a fortune to get to work in just about every single province. And maybe that might be worth looking at as well, not just Transnet Ports Authority. If I can go on to the next slide, you said you're looking at the guide, that's progress on the government's task scheme, a new model. Can you outline that to us, or at least let us have a document showing what you're looking at? And then the issue about representativity, I presume SAFTU is now part of MEDLAC, but have you had a re-look at how you can represent the unemployed? You've said about which ministry is responsible. Is it not something that could look at not just labor, but you mentioned other ministers might have a problem, but obviously there are a handful of other ministers that would value having input into NEDLAC altogether. And then if I can just finally have a look at the, I want to congratulate you. There are no new
Can you be fair to other members?
I want to congratulate, that's all, for the no more recruiters or wasteful expenditure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable Mkhonto. Honorable Mkhonto.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Honorable members.
We got lost.
Good morning to the DM colleagues from NEDLAC. Chair, the vaccine. But my focus will be on the vaccine production, where we learned from the media that South Africa has produced a lot of vaccines that needed to be discarded because other countries couldn't procure them. So I want to know, Chair, as to when the aim of producing those vaccines was made, the decision to produce those vaccines was made, what was the target market? And then is the second one is the July unrest. There are SMMEs, Chair, specifically in the KwaZulu-Natal, that had a franchise of Pick n Pay. And they are complaining that after the July unrest, they are not made to access the insurance funds. The Pick n Pay itself is taking the insurance is on their behalf and they are left high and dry. I just want to know as to, is NEDLAC aware of that? And how does it affect the SMMEs in KwaZulu-Natal? And what will be their intervention strategies? The last one will be on public transport. Today, Chair, we all know that petrol price and other fuels have gone up. And then how are we as a country going specifically for the SMMEs and the workers that have to go to work? How can this be, is this going to be navigated so that it doesn't affect the livelihoods of ordinary people? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mkhonto. Can Lisa please mute her mic, please? Okay. Honorable Kado.
Thank you, Chair. I've got three questions. Firstly, as far as the labor law reform task team is concerned, I'd like to know what is the scope and mandate of the task team and its timeframes. Also, who sits on it? I'm particularly curious to know whether there are any representatives from small business involved, and allied to that, whether the whole question of the automatic extension of collective bargaining council agreements to small businesses is up for review. Then secondly, on the critical skills list, if you could just tell me exactly what is the division of responsibility between Home Affairs, Employment and Labour, and Higher Education and Training in the compilation of the skills list, and how does NEDLAC come into it? What role does it play? Because it has been a concern expressed by a multitude of people over a very long period of time that sometimes the critical skills list kind of misses the boat and doesn't actually identify the skills which are most critically in need in South Africa at the moment, at a time when, as we all know, there's a massive exodus of skills. We are losing doctors, engineers, teachers, a whole lot of skilled professionals. And then thirdly, on the governance task team, it would be good to have the recommendations presented to us as a committee at some stage, because I'm curious to know exactly what they are. Presumably you can't go into that in detail today, but could you tell me what are the timeframes for the implementation of these recommendations? Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Kari. Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you for the presentation from NEDLAC. Honorable Chairperson, mine is on the vaccination rollout. I just wanted to hear what the observations have been in terms of people welcoming the third jab. I'm asking this question because it's surprising that all of a sudden people seem to be, this has not been researched, to have been quite reluctant on the third jab. And I would like to know what the view of NEDLAC is on mandatory vaccination. The last one is on the finances. I see we welcome the improvement from 1.9 to 5 million rand. But the question from my side is, how did they achieve that? To me, it seems like a wide gap. It's what we want, but I was just worried about the gap, the jump from 1.9 to 5. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you. That was the last hand. Can we get a response from NEDLAC?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and for those questions. Some of the questions are a little bit outside of my role as the ED of NEDLAC, but I will attempt to answer all those questions as well as I can. So the first question by Honourable Bagram about the critical skills list.
Sorry, ma'am. Can Matapelo mute her mic, please? Please, you may continue.
So I will also at the same time respond to the question by Honourable Member Carter on the critical skills list. What I understand, and I think the acting DG, Sam Orotoba, may also be able to assist, is that the development of that list was a joint process in government between DHE, DET, Home Affairs, and the Department of Employment and Labour. It was initially presented to NEDLAC, as I indicated, in a dialogue form. And then, if I recall, there was a process of public comments. And then the role of NEDLAC was really the social partners, business and labor, to go, you know, critical skill by critical skill and confirm if that was supported or not supported. And then after that, it was probably gazetted by the Department of Home Affairs on their experiences. The issue of the process post-NEDLAC has not been taken up by the social partners yet, but it is open. You know, the social partners may want to return to discuss this issue, but we as NEDLAC can't do that. One of the social partners need to revert on that. Then again, on the labour law reform, I will combine Honourable Member Badram and Honourable Member Carter's question. So maybe I will give a broader overview of the process. In January or February of 2021, the organised labour tabled a number of proposals that they would like to see changed to the Labour Relations Act, the Basic Conditions, the National Minimum Wage Act, and maybe also Occupational Health and Safety Act. Then sometime later last year, the organized business also made proposals and commented on the labor proposals. And then it was agreed in the second quarter of this financial year that a task team would be set up to consider all proposals, including proposals from government. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, I'm not sure, government only tabled their proposals in, I think, February this year. So although the task team was set up, and the task team is a six-a-side task team from government, from business, and from labor. On the business side, I can't comment, but my colleague might be able to assist, but Busa brings a broad representation, maybe also at, you know, also, you know, that also represents small business. On the government side, I know that the National Treasury is there together with the Employment and Labour, and it and maybe also other people from other parts of government. And then the agenda of the labour law reform process is quite extensive. Currently, the, you know, once government puts their proposals together with business and with labour, there are significant amendments to the Labour Relations Act. There are also some proposed amendments for the Basic Conditions of Employment Act and a few for National Minimum Wage and the OSH Act. However, in the task team, there is an understanding that they would prioritise amendments to the Labour Relations Act, and also on the agenda is the issue of the extension of bargaining council agreements to small business. Lastly, in terms of the timeframe, there is a commitment by the social partners that they should, this first phase of amendments to the LRA and BCA should be completed by the end of this year. I hope, Honourable Members, that I've answered all those questions. This is a big project and an important project for NEDLAC. The next issue was about the COVID-19 TERS. I don't know if I can really comment about why it is such a disaster, but what I can say is that there has been a NEDLAC, a subcommittee of the NEDLAC Rapid Response Task Team on COVID, which has met weekly or every second week, and really trying to problem solve some of the problems. And it has been an important forum where employers, especially organized employers like in the event sector, who've had problems with the COVID TERS, can get a resolution. So that has been the role of the social partners, to try and address some of the challenges and ensure that all workers who are entitled to the benefit get the benefit. On public transport, I think this was raised by Honourable Bagram and Honourable Mponto. So in this quarter, there were not deliberations on public transport. However, in previous quarters and subsequent quarters, there have been deliberations on a proposal from the Department of Transport for a public transport subsidy, as well as with PRASA, both on vandalism and modernization. Honourable Mkhonto raises whether, you know, this shouldn't be navigated further. As I indicated earlier on, it's not NEDLAC that decides what is on the agenda. One or more social partners raises it. And it might be, particularly with the increase of yesterday, that one of the social partners will ask that this matter be considered in NEDLAC. But the issue of improving public transport is on the agenda of the freight and public transport work stream. I think next with that we're going to deliberate going forward is also the commitments made by the Minister of Transport on minibus taxi transformation. Then on the governance task team, I think when NEDLAC comes back for the third quarter, we will be able to share with you the approved recommendations from the EXCO. And we are still in the process now of implementing the recommendations of the Executive Council. So SAFTU is not yet a member, and there are ongoing deliberations on how unemployed people become members. And at the moment in NEDLAC, there are a number of ministers that are part of our Executive Council, including from the National Treasury, from the DTFC. And we will be looking at enhancing that going forward. In respect of Honourable Member Carter's question, the recommendations I think can be presented in the next quarter. The next time we have to report on the third quarter, sorry, Honourable Chairperson. On the time frames, you know, obviously this depends on our ongoing negotiations, but from the NEDLAC Secretariat side, our target is that we should have a revised constitution by October this year, as well as revised protocols. Amendments to the NEDLAC Act, as you know, is a parliamentary process and could take longer than that. Thank you for the congratulations on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I will ask the CFO, Farhan Shamsuddin, to talk about the improvements. But just then to move to the vaccine question from Honourable Mponto and Honourable Norbo. When the vaccine rollout started, which was really in March last year, the aim was to get as many vaccines as possible into the country, both from bilateral agreements with manufacturers, as well as, I can't remember, there was this committee that was meant to coordinate for developing countries. And that's where, as I understand, targets were worked out. From NEDLAC social partner side, there was more focus on getting these vaccines at the time. It was before the devastating third wave, and being able to set up proper distribution mechanisms, which particularly Business for South Africa was involved in. I think it has been a disappointment from the social partners, despite a lot of collaboration and joint working, that the vaccine rollout has not reached as many people as possible. It has been discussed many, many times within NEDLAC. This is also to answer Honourable Member Norbo's question. The social partners have also worried about the third jab, the boosters, and particularly organized labor and business committed to time and vaccination programs and make sure that they implement the provisions of the direction, which is to provide workers, for example, with transport and time off to get a vaccine or a booster. Then on, I think this is my last issue, on the issue of the vaccine mandate, the social partners within NEDLAC were very certain at, particularly towards the end of last year, in the face of the Omicron variant, that a vaccine mandate would push up numbers and that would protect the economy from having to close down and for there to be more restrictions. And there was a strong push at the end of last year for vaccine mandates. I think as the Omicron variant has developed, there is less a push at the moment, although there are still some companies and other institutions that support the vaccine mandate. As a result of the views of the social partners, the Department of Employment and Labor did a code of good practice, which does not make vaccines mandatory, but indicates that if a health risk assessment at the workplace indicates that you need to have that a mitigation measure is vaccine mandates, then that is what you need to do for your workplace to be safe. Honourable Chairperson, if the CFO can just answer the last question. Thanks.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. Yes, I think the comment in relation to the increased expenditure in quarter two, I think the main reason for that is at the time we were coming out of the third wave, I think, of the of COVID, and we've seen an increase in activity in that period, being the second quarter of the financial year. So with that increase in activity, there was naturally an increase in procurement, which obviously then increased the expenditure accordingly. Also, we were further down the line in terms of the implementation of our procurement plan. And obviously, after appointing a few service providers, our expenditure then increased accordingly. And we've seen a similar trend in the rest of the financial year. Honourable Chairperson, I hope that covers the member's question in that regard. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. In the light that there are no questions, I think Executive Director of NEDLAC, there is a, in this issue of skills, I want, maybe it's an exercise that is to be done so that we get it when we come back. It's an exercise that is necessary for us and the country. If you are able, and I want to emphasize, if you are able to expose to us as Parliament that the skills, the exodus of skills from 1994, I'm saying from 1994, because in the sector that I was working at, I know that there was that exodus immediately after 1994. Now, if you are able, maybe it's a cumbersome exercise, but try it. Check the skills that left the country in which sector and the impact of that. And what is it then as the country we have done? And if it doesn't fall, if it falls within your ambit, it's fine, you'll check assistance from that, because I don't want us to just throw it that the skills left and therefore and the country is in this, because some of the skills they left, some of them they came back and do some other things within government in various sectors. So at some time, at some point, when you do have a point, when you have time to do that. Otherwise, thank you very much for the presentation and the improvement in your finances. And please try and assist other entities to improve on some of the issues. Yeah. No, that's fine. Thank you very much. We will then.
Yeah.
If do you want. We are done. Can we then get a compensation fund?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the Honorable Members. I will do the presentation for the compensation fund, Chair. Maybe let me just apologize first. Our office is not so far from the Church Square, and there is a Mamelodi Sundowns Trophy Parade going to happen in a few minutes, so there may be a bit of noise in the background. Thank you, Chair. Can I proceed with the presentation, Chair?
Yes, Mr. Mafata.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'll start my presentation. I think this is the presentation of the quarter two performance. I am joined by the Executive Committee of the Compensation Fund, Chair. Ms. Millie Reiters, who is the Chief Director of Compensation or Medical Benefits, Mr. Johnny Mudiba, who is the Chief Operations Officer, Ms. Fazana Fakir, who is the Chief Director for Rehabilitation and Orthotics, Ms. Slindile Mhlungu, who is the Acting Chief Director of Corporate Support, Ms. Mecha Tongwani, who is the Director of ICT, Ms. Katleho Lebepe, who is the Director for Anti-Fraud and Corruption, and Ms. Jotsana Achari, who is the Acting Director Risk Management, and the Acting Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Linda Gota. Chair, I'll just start my presentation with on slide four, just a recap of this is the mandate of the Compensation Fund, just a reminder that we derive our mandate from the COID legislation, section 15 is what established the Compensation Fund to enable the country to be able to fulfill its constitutional mandate of providing social security to those that are injured in the workplace. If I look at the next slide, Chair, so this presentation basically is the presentation of the APP for 2021-2022, which is year two of the implementation of our five-year strategic plan. And that's the strategic plan has about six strategic objectives of improving systems of internal control, ensuring that we pay appropriate benefits to intended beneficiaries efficiently and as well as at a reasonable cost, while also then contributing to employment and economic growth through the rehabilitation and reintegration activities of the compensation fund. Fourth objective, developing the capacity of the fund to deliver according to its mandate. And fifth objective, I'm experiencing a bit of a background noise. Okay, thanks, Chair. So the fifth input.
Sorry, Mr. Mfat. I don't know whether it's my gadget. I get a sense that there's somebody speaking while she was talking.
There was somebody speaking, Chase.
Zolani, can you attend to that, please?
Chair, I think we are going to start a bit long ago, Mr. Mafat. We are getting it.
All right, improving operational efficiencies through process reengineering and technological innovation, and lastly, improving ethical and conduct as well as zero tolerance to fraud and corruption. So these are the six objectives within which the APP is implemented, and we are in the second year then of the implementation of the APP in the 2021-2022 financial year. If I move to the slide 9, Chair, or slide 10, this is then the, or 11, this is the performance of the compensation fund for quarter two of the 2021-2022. We had 19 planned indicators, and of these 19 planned indicators, 8 of these indicators were due for reporting in quarter two. And out of these two, that these 8 that were due for reporting, 2 were not achieved and 6 were achieved. I will then talk to the details of those in the subsequent slides. But program one had 67% of its targets that were due for reporting achieved, with program two at 50%, and the two programs, program three as well as program four, at 100%, which takes us into the 75% performance for the period ending September 2021. If I go to the next slide, Chair, this just then breaks it down and compares quarter one to quarter two. I'll skip the slide, Chair. If I go to slide 14, the other first, slide 13 is just those annual targets that were not due for reporting in September 2021. So the first target that was due for reporting was the percentage of improved visibilities and accessibility strategy implemented. The accessibility and visibility strategy is a strategy that we've developed and adopted in the fund to improve the reach of the compensation fund services, as well as to be able to reach out to the stakeholders of the compensation fund. We developed the strategy, which is implemented over multiple years. And for the quarter two of the 2021-2022, we had targeted to have implemented 20% of those programs. So now these are programs that both include improving access through technology, brick and mortar, as well as communication campaigns. So there's various campaigns that we're running, and as well as initiatives on a technology and physically to improve accessibility to services of the fund. We were able to then implement about 21% of these. And the second target under program one that was reportable in September was the reduction in the vacancy rate. The target here was since the restructuring of the fund and the implementation of the new structure in 2018, we have been seized with recruiting and getting these scarce skills that had been identified in the fund, part of which are those medical, clinical, as well as financial skills. So it is the target was to be at about 13% vacancy rate, though the overall target is around 9.9, but for September we had then to reduce this to about 13.3, but we could only get to 15.5. And part of the issues here is around delays in the triggering of posts. There's a whole lot more that we need to do in terms of revaluing posts, especially as we go to market and struggle to attract some of the skills. We're competing with the skills with medical aids outside, as well as some of the financial sector institutions which pay differently to the public service. And as a result, we then struggle to try and attract some of the skills. We then have to go back to the drawing board, revalue some of the posts and regrade some of the posts and re-advertise and so on. So that whole process takes us a bit of time. And also the fact that the limitations that also the public service rules places upon us, especially with regard to expansion of the support structures, when we do restructure the organization, ends up in a situation where even some of our functions such as HR, we're unable to increase it such that they're able to provide adequate support. And they often stretched, and we then have to make do with what we have, which tends to delay some of the feeding of the posts. The also target was monitoring the mutuals who are licensed in terms of Section 30 of COID to provide services in the mining as well as the construction sector. So the quarterly reports that they need to submit that then processed through the boards, these were also then submitted for that financial year. If I go to the next slide, slide 15. So the next indicator in under program two that was due for reporting, first one was on the percentage of claims adjudicated within 30 working days. The target here is 85% for the year, and for quarter two, it was also 85%. Of the 53,310 claims that we received for the period ending September, about 42,353 were able to be processed within 30 working days of receipt, which takes us to about 79%, which made us fall short of the 85% target that we've set. And the big challenge here continues to be that there's a high number of claims that we receive that do not have the adequate information to enable claims officers to be able to make decisions on these claims. So as opposed to us just repudiating the claim and leaving the client or the worker struggling, we then tend to pend these claims and work with the employers to try and get the information that is outstanding. If it's information that is outstanding from a medical service provider, we also then try and get this information from the medical service provider, which tends to then slow down the process and the rate at which we process these claims. So there is work that is happening in the provinces. Our provincial offices are engaging with employers. We have in campaigns, targeted campaigns, especially among those problematic sectors that where we tend to experience this. We're also having engagements also with organized labor also, because they play a role in advocating and working with employers to make sure that when incidents are reported to the fund, these incidents are supported by adequate information that enables us to be able to assist the worker much more speedily. So these are some of the interventions that we are putting in place. We also have entered into some performance improvement programs. You'll see in the later slides when I break down this performance per province, you'll see that there are some provinces that are struggling. And to help them with some of these initiatives that I spoke about, we've entered into service delivery improvement plans, agreements with them, and working through head office, we're supporting them to implement these plans to make sure that we turn the situation around. The second indicator was the percentage of approved benefits that are paid within 5 working days. So of the 2.2 billion that was paid in quarter two, about 2 billion of it was paid within 5 working days. So once claims are approved and authorized by the claims handlers and so on, they get to finance, where they then have to go through final validation before they are paid. And the standard that we've set there is that this needs to be paid and released within 5 working days. So we're able to achieve this particular target. If I go to the next slide, the next slide just shows program three. Program three, the percentage of requests for pre-authorizations of specialized medical interventions finalized within 10 working days of receipt. For with program three, I think, and program four, we're starting to see the benefits and the good benefits of the controls as well as the innovations that we've implemented in CompEasy with regards to how fast and the efficiency within which we are able to process medical invoices. The percentage of requests for pre-authorizations, which are specialized medical interventions where claims need to be reopened, where workers would then need to go for medical procedures. The standard we've set is that the approval needs to be finalized within 10 working days. Of the 5,198 requests we've received, about 5,068 were approved within the 10 working days, which takes us to about 97%. With medical invoices, we've received 340,673 medical invoices, and of these, about 300,139 were processed and finalized within 40 working days, meaning they would have been paid within these 40 working days. That takes us to about 88% against the target that we had set of about 80%. So now these, as I indicated, this shows that the benefits of a working system that helps us and helps the medical fraternity to make sure that they're able to submit their invoices to us correctly and accurately, and then we're able to process these invoices as and when we receive them. Program four, the percentage of compliant requests for assistive devices finalized. Part of the automation that we've included, that we've introduced with the CompEasy system, is also the automated process for submission of these requests by medical providers, and as well as processing internally once they get to the compensation fund. Of the 757 requests that we've received for the period ending September, about 721 of these were approved within 15 working days of receipt. This takes us to about 95% of approvals. If I go to slide 20, Chem, I've already spoken to the reasons for the deviations of those two indicators that we've not achieved. That was in slide 18. If I go to slide 20, Chair, and to 21, that's where then I start to break down the performance of the core service delivery indicators. And the first one is the request for pre-authorizations for medical interventions. And I think we can see here, for example, that this is a target that we've been able to meet both in quarter one and quarter two, and all provinces have been able to meet this. This target is in the upwards of 97%. This is an online process that we've introduced with CompEasy. So it's much easier and quicker for doctors to submit this authorization request and for our claims handlers as well as our clinical teams to be able to process them. The second one under, it's the 80% of medical invoices that are finalized within 40 working days. This just shows that breakdown. It also shows here that all provinces have achieved this particular target, sitting at around 88%. And if you see, most provinces are sitting at around 90%. If medical practitioners submit invoices, submit them in the manner and format in which we have published and gazetted, these invoices come easily into the system and are able to be processed and paid within a reasonable period of time. And I think this shows, and we are starting to see a large number of health practitioners utilizing the technology that we've provided them to be able to submit these invoices online themselves and get us to be able to pay these invoices on time. It's a trend that we hope would continue, and that would help us to move this percentage closer to 100% share, and also even reduce the number of days that we take to process these invoices. If I go to slide 23, this is the 85% of claims adjudicated within 30 working days. So this is the target relating to adjudication of claims. I spoke to the issues around incomplete claims that are submitted, as opposed to us just repudiating claims because they don't have the relevant information. We can hand these claims and work with the employers to obtain the outstanding information so that we can then finalize the claim, because the ultimate objective is to assist the injured worker. And it just shows that there's three provinces that have been excelling, and they have been excelling consistently around dealing with it. And this goes a long way towards management of stakeholders, building relationships with employers, as well as improving the employer education, which has assisted these three provinces to be able to get to the levels where they are. The performance improvement plans that we've entered into with other provinces focuses mainly on some of these strong points that these other provinces have been able to do, so that we can also see an improvement around those provinces. If I go to slide 24, it just shows then the assistive devices. Also, this shows, and you can see that most of the percentage is in the upwards of 90%, with just one province that was just below 90%, but close to the 90%. So this is a target that we're monitoring. We hope over time to reduce the number of days as well as improve the targets to closer or even to 100% itself. And then we go to slide 25, which is just the financial performance of the organization. Previously, we had omitted this slide in our previous presentation. There was a request from the committee that we need to reflect on how we're utilizing the resources as well as the performance, financial performance of the fund. So just at a high level, if I look at the If I go to the revenue, just looking at the revenue level and a high level, our revenue, for example, has increased by about 36%. If we look at this compared to the previous financial year for the same period. So we've collected about 11.7 billion rands. 3 billion of it was from exchange transactions, this in interest or income that we get from our investments. And the 8.7 billion that we've collected was collections from levies that employers would pay. So by end of September 2021, we had collected about 8.7 billion, which makes the total of revenue about 11.7 billion. When we compare this to the budget on the far right, what we had budgeted for the period up to September was about 10.5 billion collections of the 14 billion that is budgeted for the whole financial year. And it just shows then that we're able to exceed the budget by about 12%. If we go to the expenses, if you look at the top line item, it's the benefits. So these are benefits that we paid for. These are benefits that we pay for medical expenses, injured workers, as well as some pensions as well. So if you look at the comparison between last 2020 and 2021, we paid about 2.7 billion in 2021 compared to about 161 million. I think the big difference here is the technical provisions that we are now doing on a monthly basis, as opposed to in the past where we focused mainly on the actual cash that we made, and also a large number of some of the claims that would be paid out of the provisions that we had created in the prior year for claims that would have been received but not paid at that time. So this also in a way shows a bit of efficiency around the fact that claims that we do pay are current claims. Hence, you can actually see them on the statement of financial performance. If I go to the total expenditures, which still includes the benefits, but it's including also the cost of administering the fund, we had spent about 4.3 billion. A large increase is as a result of the benefits that I've explained at the top, as well as the costs related to, if you recall that the department has expanded the occupational health and safety inspections. And this was possible due to the fact that as part of the proactive measures of preventing workplace injuries in the workplace, compensation fund decided to fund the inspections for occupational health and safety inspections to make sure that we expand capacity and we prevent injuries. So some of those costs are now starting to come through in the 2021 financial year, which shows how we've then increased some of these costs as a result of the increases in the occupational health and safety inspections. And this takes us, if I look at the bottom of the statement of financial performance, and then just shows that we had a actual surplus of about 7.5 billion. And you compare this on the right to the budgeted surplus by the same period, which is supposed to be about 2.4 billion. We've actually exceeded the surplus that we budgeted, and this is largely due to the improvement in the collections, as well as the improvements also in some of the investments that we've made. If I go to the next slide. Next slide, just slide 29, which is the statement of financial position of the fund, which is the balance sheet. It just shows the health of the organization. And I think here, one thing just to note is that the improvement or the increase in the size of assets that the fund has. If we look at the September 2021, we're sitting at about 94 billion compared to 83 billion in the last financial year, the same period. But if you compare with the last audited balance sheet of 2021, which was sitting at around 85.8 billion. If we look at the next slide, at the bottom of the, I think this just shows at the bottom of the slide, it just shows in the net assets of the organization in terms of the reserves that we have. We can see that our reserves have, when you've taken into account all the liabilities as well, our reserves has improved from about 44 billion for the same period last year to 48 billion now, which is an 8% increase. And when you compare that to the audited period of March 2021, which was sitting at around 40.7 billion. So this shows then an improvement in the value of the net assets of the compensation fund. Chair, I'll end my presentation here. Thank you, Chair.
From the report, we will
I seem to have lost the voice.
I wanted your hand, and your hand was not up. Okay. GM, any closing remarks?
Chair, we seem to be having a problem. We're losing voice.
Honorable Ngobo.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm very sorry to jump on you like that. I was saying one seemed to have lost the voice, the sound completely. I had another member complaining, but I'm okay now.
Do you want to ask a question?
No. Went blank. Yes. It's just the sound.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So there are no questions. Maybe it's the network that is messing us up. Am I audible?
You now are, Chair, and I wanted to ask a question. It's Michael Bagram.
Okay, Honorable Bagram.
May I go ahead, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the performance report, and I appreciate it. I see that you've put your administration at about 67%, and yet we're still getting dozens of queries and complaints from the public. Do you think that's improving, or do you think it's getting worse? What is going on? Then also have a look at the performance per indicator, and we're looking at wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Your target is 50%. One should expect a target of 100%, that you would have no wasteful and fruitless expenditure. Do you think you're going to pass your report this year? Are we going to do better than last year? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bagram. Mr. Mafata?
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Mafata. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, there is an improvement in terms of administration. I think in the main, most of the claims that or complaints and queries that we're getting would be in such instances where, for example, either people are not happy with the outcome or the decisions or the stage at which the claim is at, and it enables us then either to be able to then review or to even subject it to other processes that the Quiet Act allows for. There are instances where we still see claims that either have not been registered at all. And when we get such inquiries, then we're able to work with the employers to do that. But when you look at the volume of these complaints, they are significantly declining, which signals that the claims handlers in the provinces are actually doing a great job in making sure that once these claims are registered, we adjudicate them. And also part of the making the online experience for employers also enabling them to be able to register these claims themselves, that also goes a long way to helping us to get these claims much quicker, as opposed to when these are manually sent to the fund and then they would have to be waited to be registered internally by the staff. On the issue of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, so what the target was set based on the base from which the fund was moving from. If you recall, we've spoken of a large book of fruitless and wasteful expenditure that had developed in the fund over time that we only in earnest only started working on as part of the restructuring initiatives of the fund, the transformation initiatives of the fund. And that's why we then set a realistic target of about 50% to work through this. So for subsequent quarters, we'll show that while we are reducing it, we're actually not really near the 50% that we've set. And this has called for us to be able to look at alternatives in terms of increasing the resources that are seized with dealing with clearing this huge book of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. When you look at occurrences of new cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that has significantly declined. To insignificant levels if you look at it, but the balance still stays at a high level. Due to the nature of the business of the fund and the fact that the Quiet Act does allow claimants to litigate against the fund should they not be happy with the decision that the fund has taken. Some of these costs, such as sheriff costs, the legal fees, and so on, are things that you're sometimes not able to avoid. And these are some of the things that we end up classifying as fruitless and wasteful expenditure somehow. So I think I've responded to the two questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mafata. And thank you very much, members. DM, any closing remarks? Is the Deputy Minister still with us? Mr. Wababa?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. I'm still with you. I'm multitasking, actually. I think our officials has put quite an extensive presentation with much details before us, Chair. And I don't think at this point in time I want to erase their input. But just to highlight one point, Chair, as my input that deals with the issue of the intervention of government, and I'm sure Honorable Chair and Honorable Members are aware of such, that our government has extended the general fuel, price levy intervention until the beginning of August. I'm sure you are aware of that. Both National Treasury and Department of Energy, remember, they not so long ago, they initially announced a temporary reduction in general fuel levy of 1.50 per liter between April and May to provide a limited short-term relief to households from the rising fuel prices. I think all of us, we know it because we are where we are because of the continued whether it's war or between Russia and Ukraine. And this relief, it will be funded. I'm sure we are aware of what both the Treasury and Department of Energy has said, that they will use a liquidation of a portion of some strategic crude oil reserves. So I think Honorable Members, as and when they do address their constituencies, I think they will talk about such. And I'm sure government at this point in time is busy dealing with a long-term, because we have to deal with a long-term process, not short-term limited. We have to come up with a long-term relief to our people with regards to fuel levy and with regards to this issue of the petrol hike. I'm happy that we are where we are currently with both our performance, and I know normally the committee becomes very hard on us. I'm actually surprised that today you are very lenient, especially Honorable Cardo and Honorable Bergfrein. They are very lenient to us, but I think we should give credit where it is due, that there is a level of improvement based on previous reports. And I'm sure from time to time, Honorable Members, also when they have time, they have the opportunity to visit our entities also as part of their oversight, just to go and satisfy themselves of the work and progress that is there. I'm happy that, Chair, you went also on an oversight in some of our centers in the Eastern Cape, and I'm happy that the report you brought back was very positive, because you had to also be shown to the systems, and you were very excited about what you saw, contrary to a popular view or to a view that says that the systems are not necessarily working in compensation fund. But so far, so good, Chair. I'm very happy with what we have presented before you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Honourable members, thank you very much. I think we've come to the end of our presentations today. Until we meet next week, thank you very much, our committee, the end of our business and our meeting standard, Jen. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was delightful. Thank you.
Thank you. You still owe me.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you.